to protect, attack, and support. What are you here for? Oh, a little Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. Welcome! I'm Amelia Dalton, and I have just one question for you. What has the electromagnetic spectrum done for you lately? I'm guessing not a lot, but it can. Oh, it can. Let me bring in Hayden Nelson from Abaco. Hayden is taking us on a unique journey to the next generation of electronic warfare, and we're bringing that spectrum with us. Oh, and no flak jackets are needed just yet.
Hi, Hayden. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. So first, quick, give my audience a quick rundown about what Abaco is all about.
So Abaco is a technology provider. We're really about rugged embedded computing, so we want to provide mission-critical technology to our customers to enable embedded computing applications in the most rugged environments. And that may be from single-board computers to avionics to sensor processing, a number of different elements within military, aerospace, and industrial applications.
Okay, so Hayden, speaking of rugged environments, at this year's Embedded Tech Trends, you gave a session called Addressing Platform Challenges of Next Generation Electronic Warfare Systems. So first off, what do you define electronic warfare as, and then what are those challenges?
Sure. So it's a long title of a topic, but electronic warfare, let's first address that. Electronic warfare is electronic. We're not talking about hacking emails or things.
Right.
We're talking about dominating the electromagnetic spectrum. The spectrum, wireless waveform propagation, it's a limited resource that in the context of commercial communication, you know, that you have a certain spectral allocation to your cell phone, for example. And it's a limited resource. And on the battlefield, electronic warfare is such that we use that wireless spectrum to communicate with our soldiers, to pass intelligence, real-time information, to sense aircraft, and a number of other functions, and that's a very valuable resource for us as we're in an engagement. And so our enemies also want to use that same spectrum, and
sure.
So electronic warfare is about denying the enemy access to that spectrum. And so previously you would kind of call this electronic countermeasures. Oftentimes radar jamming is in that realm of electronic warfare. That's kind of what we're talking about. There's really breaks down into three components: electronic protect, attack, and support. And so you can kind of think of these scenarios. There may be a number of reasons that you need to go into an enemy territory with an aircraft, for example, like maybe a helicopter or a jet or something of this nature. And so you want to get in and out of that space without having those radars detect you and being able to effectively launch a weapon system to shoot you out of the sky. And so being able to shut those systems down and attack those systems or protect yourself is a critical component of electronic warfare. And so there's a technology component called a digital RF memory. It's essentially these systems, FPGAs, within our sensor processing or advanced RF and DSP product lines at Abaco. So we have a number of different product lines. Within that product line, we have a lot of cutting edge modular FPGA products that are a great fit for electronic warfare. So you take those systems and you can bolt them together with the different standard interfaces, meeting your requirements, modular, so you can optimize it for your specific threat requirement and you know, capture those signals, process them, and retransmit them into that radar in order to defeat it in some way. And you can imagine the life critical aspects of this of someone trying to shoot you down, or being able to get in and out to pull out a VIP or a downed soldier or something. But FPGAs are a critical part of that. And so some of the challenges, as you asked, are these systems are complex. There's RF, there's analog conversion, there's FPGA signal processing algorithms.
Yeah.
And not to mention, you know, those are all kind of the design aspects, but these things end up on aircraft. So they have to be very rugged, reliable, and secure. And
sure.
So those are some of the challenges. One of the critical ones around specific to EW is latency. So you can imagine if the missile's coming, I need to be able to sense what it's trying to sense to me, you know, take its signals, receive them, and retransmit them in a very fast order.
Yeah.
So system end-to-end latency is a critical challenge. And so there's a number of, back in the days of PCI, you had PCI to PCI Express, you know, there's been a trend towards parallel to serial buses. Same thing's happening on A to D devices and D to A devices. There's latency considerations for those type of systems. Designing your systems with latency in mind on the right buses in a modular way is a challenge. To meet the bandwidth requirements, so the sample rates are going up, the radars have taking more of the spectrum,
right?
And the latencies are going down, and so you need to have the latest and greatest. Like Xilinx has ultra-scale FPGAs, which have a ton of compute power,
yeah.
And so they, you know, are often necessary to compute these wideband, signal processing, and keep that IP secure. Those are some of the challenges. Latency, security, and then just kind of generally, there's a number of different computer architectures from GPUs to CPUs, you know, x86 Intel processors. No one architecture solves this problem in isolation. There's a lot of research in something called cognitive electronic warfare, where you can kind of think of these systems are getting more intelligent, being able to dynamically react to the threats.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of an area of research. And so FPGAs alone cannot solve that. Oftentimes GPUs. And so it's sort of like you apply the screwdriver to the screw and the hammer to the nail.
Right.
You got to have the right technology tool to apply to the problem. But these threats emerge quickly, so EW is a really rapidly evolving technology. So building it on open standards, modular, is critical for our customers, and getting the latest technology out there before, you know, our adversaries do.
Right.
So it's a really neat area, but it can be quite complex.
It sounds like it. All right, Hayden, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I believe you like the rugged mountain biking in your spare time. Well, where's the coolest place in the whole world that you've gone mountain biking?
Well, yeah, so in my professional life, we love rugged embedded computing. And my favorite, I have a hard time going to the gym. I'm way too high energy. But rugged mountain biking is Austin's a great town for outdoors. We have enough people living in Austin. The traffic's
okay.
Very bad.
I won't say a word.
This is on a podcast. Secrets out. Austin's a wonderful city. You know, you can move to Austin only if you come to work for Abaco Systems.
There you
right?
go.
We're hiring. AbacoCareers.com. And I really enjoy mountain biking because Austin has a great community for it. So the most treacherous place is a place called Lake Georgetown. It's a 27-mile loop. It'll make you, if you get around it, it's a fantastic trail. And if any of your readers come give it a try, it'll test your abilities.
Nice.
Right north of Austin.
Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Hayden. Well,
I appreciate the opportunity.
Did you hear the one about the prisoner and the computer in the ceiling? Sounds like a perfect lead-in for a joke, right? But alas, in this week's news you may have missed, it's true. And not in the singular, there were actually 5 prisoners and 2 computers in the ceiling. Okay, so apparently a while back there was some suspicious activity on the WebSense network servers for the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. Actually, it was WebSense that caught these incarcerated cyber shenanigans. So, it was only after the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction in Ohio moved from their Microsoft proxy servers to WebSense that a curious email came across the desk of the Ohio Inspector General. Benignly enough, that precautionary email simply reported that a computer operating on the ODRC network had exceeded a daily internet usage threshold. Okay, so not that bad, right? Oh, but it gets even better, or worse. 7 more hacking alerts came through the WebSense servers, and then a further 59 proxy avoidance alerts. And then the Inspector General was on the case. There was some serious network mischief going down at the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. But who, and more importantly, how, did this network mischief start? Well, the cyber detective work first began at the discovery of, surprise, surprise, illicit login credentials. And then it was the job of the ODRC's IT employees to track down the unauthorized computer in question. So, they finally tracked down the offending PCs by locating the network switch they were connected into. Those cyber detectives then narrowed down the search area to the exact location of the network switch and the associated ports. And then, in true detective form, they simply followed the cable from the switch to the closet in a small training room. There, they removed a couple ceiling tiles, and bam! 2 PCs hiding in the ceiling under a couple pieces of plywood. And now, the how part. How did 2 PCs find themselves in the ceiling of a prison? Well, these particular computers were clobbered together from spare parts which prisoners had collected from the Marion Correction Institution's RET3 program, which is a program that helps to rehabilitate prisoners by getting them to break down old PCs into component parts for recycling. Or putting back together into other PCs. Okay, so not only did these inmates with their kludged together PCs gain access to multiple areas of the institution, they also used the Department Offender Tracking System to steal personal information of another inmate, which allowed them to successfully apply for 5 different credit cards. On top of that, because that credit card stuff is really chump change, right? Investigators also found a large toolkit with many different hacker, one might say malicious, tools, including password cracking tools, virtual private network tools, network enumeration tools, handcrafted software, numerous proxy tools, and other software used for various types of malicious activity. Okay, so these guys were in it for the long haul, apparently, and also apparently didn't see a server change in their future. Weird. On top of all those measly 5 credit cards, they also found Bitcoin wallets, Stripe accounts, and even more bank accounts on top of that. All in all, 5 inmates were identified as being involved with the hidden computers, and rightly so, have all been separated and moved to other correctional facilities. I'm hoping they also don't get placed in other breakdown computers for various parts programs. So how does that saying go? You can teach a hacker to hack, but you can't stop him from taking his work home with him? Or something like that? All right, let's circle back to FPGAs for a sec. We all know that FPGA mezzanine cards can allow easy connection to a wide variety of peripherals to FPGA development boards. But FMC, and particularly FMC Plus, put big demands on connector technology. Those poor little connectors, always being blamed for black magic and stuff. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk, we pull back the proverbial curtain on the life of connectors for FMC and FMC Plus. So I guess in this scenario, I'm Dorothy and Matthew Burns of Samtech is the wizard. But he's actually way younger than that, and I haven't had any ruby slippers since like the 4th grade. And who the heck is Toto in this? Anyway, what are we talking about? Oh, right, FMC and FMC Plus standards and the connectors that make them work. In ANSI Vita 57.4 2016, FMC Plus, the new frontier of FPGA expansion cards, I am indeed sitting down with connector wizard himself, Matthew Burns, and we get into some serious FMC and FMC Plus connector business. You should really check it out. And you can do that by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. You can also click the link below the player on this week's fish frying page on eejournal.com, or you can check out the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/eejournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at eejournaltfm. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword eejournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 21st, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.